started, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you. Calvin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you?
All right. And I want to say right off the bat that we're going to have a fascinating discussion with a young man, Mr. Matt Stafford, who has dedicated his life to volunteering his time, working with young people, mentoring young people. And I'd like you to, as an audience, respond to whether or not you yourself may see an opportunity to make a difference in somebody else's life. It's within you. The question is whether or not you are willing to step forward and help change somebody's life. I'd like to welcome you to Mr. Matt Stafford. He is the founder of Vincent James Mentoring. Good morning to you. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you. It's amazing to do this. And I'm in love with Waukesha. You know, for me, this is a great opportunity, not just to tell you guys about Vincent James Mentoring, but to tell you guys about the reason why mentoring is so important.
So let's begin by talking a little bit about Matt Stafford.
So it's fun. I have a very unique and interesting background. I'm the seventh of my family. I was permanently placed in my foster family for 17 and a half years.
At the age of what?
2.5.
Okay.
And my dad, you know, was an amazing man. So I was the seventh. I was the youngest.
Okay, so hang on.
Go ahead.
Let's go back. Your birth mom and dad. Let's begin there.
Yeah, so my biological mother and father, because of their mental and physical disabilities, gave me and my half-brother up to Milwaukee social system.
And at the age of two?
Yep. My brother was five, and I was—
Were they taken away, or they just made a decision to give you
my,
guys up?
My mother had to call the police on herself. She would have physically harmed us if she didn't. We wouldn't be alive.
Right.
You know, so
your mom and dad were not a family unit?
No, my biological mother and father was not a family unit at all. My biological father was actually homeless most of his life, his adult life, after serving in the military. He got PTSD or,
right,
you know, whatnot. And he just one day decided he wanted to live on the street. And then my biological mother, she had extreme traumas growing up in, you know, the family. And when she had my brother and myself, she didn't know how to be a parent.
Right.
So she had to give us up, you know, or she would have harmed us tremendously. At least she had that good.
No question.
Yeah.
She certainly, and you sometimes hope that there are others who will do what your mom did, would be as intelligent as she was to,
right,
realize there's more than she could handle.
Right. If you're struggling as a parent and you can't be able to serve your children or to give the proper care to your child, yes, absolutely. Please, you know, contact the social system and the social services to get help, but also to see if it's a better option to go let your children go into foster care.
So let's talk about the life that you were able to lead once you were went into a foster care?
Well, to be honest, it saved my life as a child. It when my foster parents, Vincent and Nancy Conaglero, decided to take me and my brother on, oh my gosh, it was a life changer. With foster care, it's very rare to have a permanent placement, even as a foster child, you know. So they took it on as we were adopted. My biological mother would not give up her rights to allow us to be adopted. But it was a great thing to understand, you know, my biological mother, not that I had a good relationship with her at all. And frankly, I don't have a good relationship with my biological mother right now because all of the unique traumas
right.
from her. But my foster mom and dad, they're my family. They're my mom and dad. So they're the individuals that raised me.
Now, you said there were six others yes. in the house.
So my
were they all adopted?
No.
Not adopted, but foster children?
So my mom, Nancy, had Belinda, Vincent, Anthony, and Lorena. That was her biological children. Then she adopted Marcus, and he was adopted from birth. Dwayne and I were fostered, but we were fostered at a very young age.
Right.
And to take on two kids after you have a full house of five.
Right.
I mean, even to take on, you know, when you have four kids, you know, to take on another individual that's not your blood related, it that's amazing.
So let's talk about the fact that you had troubles once you started growing up as a young boy.
Right. So knowing that my biological parents didn't want me, even that they're mentally disabled, why didn't you want me? I'm your kid,
right.
correct? But knowing they're so disabled that they couldn't have me, but my father, he's my hero, he was my everything. When I was growing up, you know, he showed me I was his son no matter what. It didn't matter blood or foster. He was taking care of us. He said, you know, there was a moment when I was 10 years old and he saw that I was really struggling with things, thinking about it. He said, boy, come here. And he got down on one knee. He was a big man, 6'2". You know, about 250, 260 pounds, great man. And he said, you're my son. No matter what you're thinking, you're my son. It doesn't matter if you're blood or not, I'm your father and you belong in my family.
So let's talk about how those feelings that you had growing up, they kind of turned into you being wayward and heading down the wrong path.
Right. Well,
because you were in this house
yeah.
where the people love you and showed you all that commitment, but in the back of your mind, you're still thinking about the rejection of your birth parents.
Right. Well, until I was 13, you know, we had a really good life until I was like 13. Then my sister and her husband died in a car crash, and her name was Lorena and his name was Kevin, and that was a horrible death. It was a drunk driver head-on right. collision, and we had seven deaths in 6 years in my family. Just really, you know, it when one death happened every single year.
Right.
So I didn't know how to process my hurt from and the unique traumas from my biological family. And there's all these deaths that are happening. Even that we went to church and we, you know,
right.
all of, you know.
Look, man, that's tough for anybody.
Oh, right? Yeah. It's unprecedented for a family to have 7 deaths in 6 years.
Right.
And it just destroyed my psyche. I had so much trauma, but I didn't even know how to cope with it.
Right.
So I was like, well.
And even your foster family, mom and dad, they had to deal with their own trauma in losing that many.
Well, my father was one of the 7 that passed away. He passed away when I was 15.
So here's why I think your story is so warranting of being heard, and why I think out of all the interviews I've ever done, yours is one of the ones that I relish the most, because, you know, my wife and I are treatment foster parents ourselves, and we have taken in a young man 19 years ago who requires 24-hour care.
That's amazing.
So, and we still have him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I want people to understand what children are faced with. Let's talk about how you reacted to all of that.
Oh, the gloves came off. No one could control me at all. One of my friends in junior high, he smoked a little weed and, you know, whatnot. I don't remember if I ever did drugs, because I was always way too drunk.
Right.
Even as a 14-year-old and a 15-year-old, I was plastered through junior high and high school. It was just really hard.
And your foster mother had all she could do to try to hold things together.
Right. And, you know, at that time, you know, I was like, oh, you're the worst. And
so hold on. So my guest is Mr. Matt Stafford. He has created a nonprofit called Vince and James Mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's a fascinating story. But more than the fact that it's a fascinating story, I think he's somebody who should be supported. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. My guest is Mr. Matt Stafford. He is a wonderful, wonderful human being who's dedicated his life to working with young children. And he has created a nonprofit called Vincent James Mentoring. And so before we went to break, sir, we were talking, I was asking you about after the tragedy that happened in your life back to back as a young boy, did you receive therapy, or you just started? You said you spent most of your middle school time drunk in the class.
Well, middle school and high school, I was plastered. I was drunk. But I'm surprised I wasn't in a juvenile detention or something, because I was just always drunk.
That's your way. That was your way of handling the tragedy.
Oh yeah, seven deaths in 6 years.
Right.
And you know, my mom, my foster mom, Nancy, you know, for her to try to help and control me was it was impossible.
Right.
So, and no, I didn't receive much counseling at all. You know, we went to church when we were kids, and you know, going through you know, my life. But to be honest, there was no real counseling.
So
at all.
Is it safe to say you were a juvenile delinquent?
Oh gosh, yes.
What were some of the things you were doing?
Oh, I was stealing liquor from discount liquor. I was breaking into the buildings. Half of the pranks that I did at Waukesha North was, you know, just I was half, you know.
Yeah. Drunk, right.
Drunk, and I was just wanting attention, you know, and for people to try to control me or to get a hold of me was almost impossible.
So the reason I think your story is so important to this listening audience is people look at young children who are delinquent and they say they're bad people.
Right.
You know, these are bad people. They should be locked up. Lock them up. And so they should know better. What do you want to say to people who have that simplistic view?
I think those individuals that, you know, just say lock them up, I want to show you the humanity in those children. You know, because it's not their actions is outburst of what's happening at home.
Right.
Or in their environments. And this is a coping mechanism for them. You know, if they don't have the right structure or the right standards that was given by, you know, their family unit, they don't know what to do or how to hold themselves. You know, when I was growing up, my father taught our family how to hold each other.
Right.
You know, here's the standards of the family. You know, how we show love is we give hugs.
Right.
You know, we look each other in the eye. We shake hands. You know, your word is your bond. You know, people aren't teaching those standards anymore.
You know, man, so I always say to people, children don't get to pick their parents.
No.
We blame children for what they do and the way they react because of the luck of the draw.
Right.
They wound up with parents who didn't purposely do things to harm their children. They just didn't know any better. Maybe they came from the same kind of environment.
Right. You know, if you come from the same type of environment, you know, generationally,
right,
it's going to be the same pattern. And really, no matter, even if you love and adore the person in your family, if you have tendencies that aren't really serving, it won't help the child to learn different traits to become a better citizen.
You know what's amazing to me, man, is all of us have somebody in our lives who we know is having a difficult time of it.
Right.
Right? Nieces, nephews, mm-hmm. You know, sisters, brothers. We all know nobody's immune from that. I don't care how much money you have, right?
Absolutely.
I don't care what the titles are. I don't care where you live. There's all of us are going to have somebody we love who are going through these difficult times.
Right.
What I never understand is why those of us who are able to don't step forward.
You know, one of the things is people don't know how to step forward as well. You know, with parents and families that have unique family traits that are, you know, borderline, you know, abusive or misleading. The parents don't know how to serve their parent, their kids.
So hold the thought. We've got to go to a break. Mr. Matt Stafford, Vincent James Mentoring is in the studio. Got to go. We'll be right back. Be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Matt Stafford. No, not the quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams.
He stole my name.
He is the founder of the Vincent James Mentoring Program. And this story is it's heartbreaking on the one hand, but on the other hand, it is very riveting, and it does go to show the most important aspect about who and what we are and what we can do, and it's what we can do for others. And Mr. Matt Stafford has put his life out front, and the goal is to make people's lives better. I respect him tremendously for that. So we were talking about, man, you went through all these troubled times.
Yes.
And in school, you're fortunate. You never wound up in police.
Oh my gosh. Police knew my middle name. Oh. they would, I'd be walking down the streets of Waukesha here, and they'd roll down their windows like, "Earl, you do anything stupid today?" "No, not yet." "Okay." "We'll find out if you do." "Okay." And I'm like, you know my middle name. That's a problem in itself.
Right.
But, you know, it.
Well, you had been so busy and active.
Right. You know, and for me, I learned in school, I didn't really learn things, you know, traditional stuff.
Drunk. Right.
Right. I was drunk all the time. I learned how to use my social skills, right? I grew on that.
Right.
And, you know, I always talked myself out of all situations. I brought coffee and donuts to any teacher or anybody that was in charge of me every Monday and Friday. So I learned at an early...
Learned how to manipulate.
Yeah, but it wasn't out of spite. You know, I just didn't want them to... get on my back.
Right.
You know, it was more like, "Here you guys go."
Well, they clearly knew you were inebriated. They
right.
kind of knew you had a problem.
Yeah, but they didn't. I masked it somewhat well.
Right.
But I was more, I had heartfelt heart problems, and my mental stability was just gone. I had so much anger. It was, from not understanding death and having 7 deaths in 6 years and no one to truly talk to other than my family. And I needed someone else.
So we live in a society, man, where people don't get it. They don't understand why children at young ages may need some psychoanalysts.
Right.
Because they think and they say, "Well, I was that age and I didn't act like that." Well, you didn't come from the same environment.
Right. And, my story is so unique as well. It's a different story. You know, it's very unprecedented. But kids, you know, even young as 10, need, if people see that they need counseling, you should put your child into counseling, or, you know, because there's a stigma, there's a giant stigma against counseling, and, well, that's not real work. You're just sitting there and talking, you know, that's boo-hoo. Here's my story. You know, it's giving thought processes. It's giving ways to manage your trauma. And also, if you have mental disabilities as well, you know, that's a way to have an outlet and have a structure to be a good individual.
So there's so many families, man, who can't afford counseling, and because counseling is not free.
Oh no, it's not.
And there's so many families, man, who think it's a, you know, it's a mark on the family.
Right. It's
that somebody has to go through therapy and counseling.
Yeah, it's like a horrible bad mark on the family that says, I'm a bad parent, I'm, you know, I raised my child wrong. The mental disabilities are so unique, and you don't know who's having problems or not, or what the young age is, you know. So counseling is a great thing. You know, pastors are considered counselors as well. But, you know, psychotherapists, grief counselors, you know, people like that have a wonderful job, but they have such a strong stigma.
So I live in the city of Milwaukee, mm-hmm. where there are murders worse than they were during the Wild Wild West.
Right.
And children are watching this, and their loved ones are being gunned down. And there is no safe place for them at very right. young ages.
Right.
And people are saying, why are they acting like that? And, yeah. and I want people to know, you have no concept at all of what it's like. Because I spent the last 12 years in the schools volunteering my time.
Right.
And I saw the damage.
Oh yeah,
that has been done to children, and somehow people seem to act and think and expect children to overcome that on their own.
Right.
It is absolutely apprehensible that people don't have compassion,
right,
for children who have nothing to do with where they live.
Suck it up,
and what they go through.
Right, you know it. It's not the era of
pull just yourself suck up it by up. The bootstraps.
Right. We're not in, you know, World War I or II type of mindset. You know, and those are great generation of people. You know, those men and women were amazing, but they didn't deal with psychological issues either. So, you know, and that just snowballed to now, where yes, we have a lot of individuals that have so much mental strife, they don't know where to go to get help. And, you know, Vincent James Mentoring, we're a custom outreach to give non-conventional counseling. One of the aspects of Vincent James Mentoring is to bring family to counseling, that when you walk in the doors of our building, is the moment you walk in, you feel, you know, and you are family. And we're building this building up to have that atmosphere.
So what's important for people in the listening audience to know is you have put your own treasure.
Yes,
where your mouth is, and you are financially raising the capital
Yeah.
To fund the Vincent James Mentoring Program. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Vincent James Mentoring is named after my father. I'm actually in the building I used to break into. So it's a beautiful building. 1877 it was built. Dr. Moore built this building. And it was just wonderful. I actually used to break in through the basement, and then I would sit on the stairs, and the cops would come knock on the door and say, "What are you doing in here?" "I'm just sitting here just wanting to own it one day." And they're like, "Get out. You can't do this." You know, and lo and behold, through just building my outreach, I was able to find the owner, get in touch with him, and we made a deal that we could buy the building, but I have to fix it up and all the things. I'm in love with it, but the issue is that I don't have the financial funds to do it. You know, I'm doing this all off of sheer willpower.
So you have a nonprofit.
Yep.
What is the name of the nonprofit?
Vincent James Mentoring.
If somebody wanted to make a donation to your organization and what it is you are doing, your 501c3, which means it's a tax deductible donation, you know.
They can write a check to Vincent James Mentoring Foundation and mail it to 307 East Main Street. That would be so helpful. And also we have a Venmo account as well, Vincent James Mentoring Foundation. So, and we're a custom-built outreach for the social system, the schools, the other nonprofits. Anywhere that we see we can serve, we're going to serve. Our nonprofit is not about us. It's about serving the teens and the families within Waukesha County. And we're working with the people that no one wants to work with. In the last year, I've done 6 suicide watches where, you know, someone was afraid to go to Rogers, but said, "Matt, please come to my house. Please watch me and talk me through the night." And gladly did it, but then convincing them to go to Rogers, you know, and then, I've done help with serving people that are homeless around my building while I'm working on it. And people are like, "Hey, Matt, I know you're working on this. I need some food. I need a job." So I have a network of individuals that I can say, "Okay, I can get you a job through here, here, and here. I can get you help with going through getting apartment, or, you know, just getting the ball rolling."
So look, man, people think that people who are homeless and are going through these kinds of things, unfortunately, we live in a society that's judgmental.
Right.
And so they want to point fingers at people.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just be honest, man. I always tell people this. Whoever said life was easy?
No, it's not easy.
It's not easy. Oh. And so if you're fortunate enough to be able to have sailed through life, I don't know anybody like that, by the way.
Me neither.
But there are some who have. But if you've been able to make it through life, you know, bravo.
Yes.
You know, that's great for you. But the majority of us catch hell in this life.
Absolutely.
And some of us are able to overcome it, but not without pain, right? So pleasure doesn't come without pain. And so that's a part of the life that we live. Let's stop acting like everybody should be able to overcome the issues that they're faced with in this life, because to some, hell is on this earth.
Right.
It's not under the ground. It's above the ground. Every day, if you're a poor person and you live in a capitalistic society where money is the god, mm-hmm. and you don't have any money, you're in hell on earth.
Right.
Come on, man.
You know, in being in a poverty or even lower middle class,
or lower class,
you know, the unique life traits that you get at that aspect, you know, serves to build traumas in your kids, yourself's lives.
Well said, man. We gotta go to the break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Matt Stafford. He has created a foundation called Vincent James Mentoring. Let's go to Nathan from Wheaton, Illinois. Thank you very much, sir. You have a question or comment?
Well, I was just hearing your program and resonated with what Max was saying because of knowing people with great needs, as we all do, and just was amazed of the transformation. And I didn't hear previously what was the main change in Max's life to bring him to where he is.
Mentors. So thank you for calling in too. Mentors for me. There was a man named Dean Culver that saved my life with a hug. He started a place called the Teen Center when I was 15. My father passed away and, you know, all this stuff that was going on. And when he opened up those doors, he didn't even know that I was suicidal. And he saved my life with a hug. I had a suicide note in my backpack and a butcher's knife. I was going to end my life that night. And the moment he gave me a hug, I went to the dumpster. I threw my backpack away. And that helped me and I stayed with the teen center. The teen center was the foundation of my outreach. And through the teen center and through Strong Links, my other nonprofit that I was working in for 13 years, it was mentoring the right individuals in my life at the right time, you know, and this is what helped me stay alive.
Nathan?
Yes, and I'm hearing that, and I'm always thinking about if a person at 19 can earn a living and raise a family, that seems like an ideal for a young person to get a work ethic, have a work ethic. And I know that's not just a given and even harder in our culture than it's ever been. But was that part of your transformation to going from not having a work ethic to gaining a work ethic?
So let me say this to you, sir. I'm 68 years old, soon to be 69 years old. Back in my day, work ethic was created through paper routes. I don't care if you lived in the suburbs, if you lived in the city. We all learned work ethic at the young age of 12 because we had something called paper routes. It didn't matter how poor your family was, you were able to put money in your pocket, learn the work ethic. Well, guess what? Paper routes don't exist anymore. They've taken all of that away. And so we've got to create opportunities for children to learn work ethic. We rail against them for not having work ethic, but how are they supposed to learn it?
Right. You know, and also with my nonprofit, I'm showing kids how to do that. You know, in families, you know, if they want to learn how to have a stable job and a stable household, I'm trying to show them the right morals and the stability that they need to have to give to their children as well.
Nathan.
And I saw exactly what you were saying, not at all blaming those that don't have it, but basically how do you gain it? And you're answering part of that question.
So let me say this to you, Nathan. Last year I created a nonprofit called Voices of the Elders. We mentor boys 10 to 13 years old. Men of my generation. And one of the main things that we work with those young boys and now girls on is teaching them work ethic. To expect them to do something that they haven't ever done before because they turned 16 to 17 years old is one of the main reasons why children are failing. We have a system that is not supporting them in a manner and in a way that it should, and yet we expect them to do something that they haven't been exposed to.
They have no idea what to do.
Right.
You know, they have these expectations that they, you know, have to achieve, but they have no tools to achieve, you know, these, you know, amazingly tall expectations. And for us, you know, in Vincent James Mentoring, we're here to give the mental stability, the counseling, but also show them that they're worth, you know, everything. They could own their own business at one day, but giving the tools for it.
Nathan, quickly, last second.
Yes. Oh, just thank you. And because I know of a person and happened to be involved in a men's study at church with a person turning 18 that's almost identical to the story of Max. And so that's what caught my attention. We've been trying to encourage and help them in every way.
Thank you, Nathan, so much. Thank you very much for the call. Yes.
Thank you.
I want to say to you, Matt, man, it's time travels too fast.
It sure does.
And I'm going to extend the invitation to bring you back.
Yes.
Because I think your story mirrors so many others in the society that need support. And because of somebody making a difference in your life, you're now able to make a difference in many other people's lives.
Yeah, like Dean Culver saved my life with a hug. And without that hug, I would have been another suicide.
All right, listen, we got to go. We'll be right back. Man, thank you.
Thank you for having me
today. And I promise you, we'll bring you back.
Awesome.
Be right back.